Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacle. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He's yeah! Gone. Australia got it.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Good to have your company for episode 23 of Shim, Spider and so much more. Hasn't that gone quickly? What a week in football. Newcastle Jets' potential new owners pulling out of the deal. The A-League remains without its much-coveted independence. And the great Paolo Rossi passed away as well. For those of us of a certain age, part of our childhood, I think, died too this week. Later on, we got another member of the Golden Generation in Luke Wilkshire as our special guest. Before that, our regular duo from the Golden Generation, or should that be the GGs in case of Spider, will run the rule over the week's happenings in football. Jelko Kalats turning 48 on Wednesday. Craig Moore turned 45 on Saturday. How was your birthday bash, Maury? Tenants lager all round?
Mate, I remember when I could at least drink 10 cans of Tennant's Lager. Mate, I could only manage three this time round. But that was quiet at the in-laws. A few cans of Tennant's Lager and a carry-out Indian, Simon. Yeah? Times have changed.
Carry-out Indian. Jeez, you get a lot more.
Were you on the iron? Is that takeaway?
Mate, takeaway.
Has to be, doesn't it? Has to be. Were you on the iron brew as well?
I just stick to the tenants, but yeah, right. The iron brews, it's always handy here in Scotland, as you
absolutely
know.
Absolutely. Spider, you still in lockdown over there?
Yeah, we're sort of still in this mini lockdown, mate, but we're getting there. We're getting some good news that we will start playing in January, so that's fantastic. Well, hey. So yeah, we're almost down. It's almost like an Australian pre-season, to be fair. It'll be a 4 month pre-season.
6 months
by the time we start.
Well, at least you've got no excuses when it does kick off. You've got to be ready. All right, let's get on with it. First up is Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, which has been live streaming since 2008, specializing in custom-built stream pages, pay-per-view, and multi-language streaming. They can cater to large online conferences with multiple simultaneous streams and destinations, including all social media channels, servicing clients Australia-wide. Go to streamgate.com.au, or you can find them on Instagram. So, guys, first item on the agenda today, as it seems to be most weeks, is this unbundling of the A-League, a saga which started, I think, when I was clean-shaven. Sydney FC CEO Danny Townsend confirming this week on Twitter when challenged about the lack of advertising and general visibility for the upcoming A-League season, confirmed this week that independence was still not done. Now, Joseph Carozzi of the FA board, also on Twitter, pointed out fairly that this had been on the agenda for 40 years and that it was about to get done and that goodwill was there on all sides. But the quote from James Johnson is the one that we keep coming back to. If we don't get this done before the A-League season starts, we may as well not bother. We're less than 2 weeks away, guys. What's going on?
Mm.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, ain't it? We keep waiting, and I think everyone, and I think the people in charge as well, when they get these questions thrown at them by Twitter, I think the people out there are actually in frustration as well, because there are a lot of people out there that care for the game as well. As much as we do on the pod here, and that's what we're talking about, they do actually care for the game and they actually want some sort of answers. And when they're not getting it, you know what we like? We get more and more frustrated.
Yeah, and I poked the bear a little bit, Spider, on Twitter with Danny, just to find out, like I says, where we were kind of at and what the difficulties were, because... I mean, we're obviously not seeing the whole picture for there to be still complications, or maybe there's not complications, but for something not to be locked away at this stage, it is a little bit frustrating, because, and it will be frustrating for the clubs as well, because they want that clean breakaway. They want to know exactly what their future looks like so that they can start to generate revenue and sponsorship deals and all those kind of things. But Simon, as you touch on, mate, less than 2 weeks away, you know, we need a decision. Mr. Carozzi, I had to have a laugh at one of his tweets when he was talking about the state of origin. It's great to see the Reds against the Blues. I'm not sure what state of origin he was talking about. But Spides, is it not the Blues v the Maroons?
Well, it always has been. But unless he was talking about rugby union. isn't the Queensland Reds the rugby union team?
That's right. It is.
Yeah. That's right.
Far out.
Just to bring us back to the football for a moment, I think the frustration on the lack of independence is twofold, isn't it? First of all, they keep being these deadlines thrown out there. We're gonna be done by the end of June. We're gonna be done by the end of September. It's gonna be finished by the start of the season. It's gonna be done by the end of the season. They just continually miss these deadlines, and the fans are in the dark as to why. Nobody ever says. You know, we're frustrated that we haven't made the deadline. It just sort of drifts into the next one. That's one of the frustrations. I think the second one is that it seems pretty clear to me that the clubs are not going to, you know, go on to the next level until they get that independence. Therefore, you know, we got this A-League season hoving into view, and there's not a lot of publicity about it. And fans are going, well, you know, we're passionate, as Spider says, about the game. We want to know about the game. We want it to get on to the next level. And it's just not happening. And I think, to be fair, you know, those stakeholders, and they're the majority stakeholders, the supporters and the people who play the game, they deserve some answers as to why it's not happening.
Yeah, and it becomes a confidence thing, Simon, as well, within the game, in terms of when you keep missing deadlines. Yeah, it's no different. A coach saying to a player, "Boy, listen, son, I'm going to play you next weekend. Don't play you." Like it's a confidence thing. We need confidence within the game, and at the moment, missing important deadlines and not giving the game and the future of the game any real confidence from the people that are going to support it.
Absolutely.
And this is the thing we spoke about before. I mean, we don't want to go back to other codes, but. We need someone who's running the show to actually tell us and come out there and make a statement. Now, he can be wrong. There's no problem with being wrong, but to actually show the confidence that people will believe and follow, I find that important. And we're not getting any of that. And there's got to be a group of people that are actually making these decisions, and where they know what the holdup is, but they're not telling anyone.
Talking of leadership, the sale of the Newcastle Jets has unfortunately fallen through this week. The potential owners have walked away after the club was, and this is according to a report in the Sydney Morning Herald this week, the club was unable to produce audited financial accounts for the last 2 years. That's a big concern, isn't it? How on earth has the club been able to get away with not producing financial reports for the last 2 years?
And who's in their right mind, Simon, who would buy a business that doesn't show you or give you the ability to look into how the club has been run over the past couple of years to get an accurate understanding of the costing of running a football club? For me, it's a big mess. I mean, you should actually take the license away from Newcastle Jets if we're going to be strong to what the football league and what it delivers and the administration and all those kind of things. The flip side, and this is the delicate situation with it, is going into a year where broadcast deals coming to an end and a new broadcast deal, what that potentially can look like. It's a hard one to juggle because, you know, Newcastle Jets being involved in the A-League is probably still going to be important to generate a better broadcast deal. But catch 22, seems a big mess.
It's an important region for the A-League, and yet at the moment it has no owners, no coach. Obviously owes apparently several million dollars. It would appear that there is no option, Spider, if the other clubs are going to be this independent competition and you're only as strong as your weakest link. The other clubs are going to have to take over. And in fairness, they have indicated their willingness to do that until a new owner is found.
And this is the beauty for me, and this is a great sign of how many people want the game to develop and eventuate. So we all know who the money people are that are running these clubs. Wanderers, very powerful. Sydney FC, very powerful. Victory, very powerful. Melbourne City, very powerful. Now, there's no hiding behind those. Western United, to a degree now, I would say, are in a good position. So these clubs, if they want the game to grow, and I'm sure they do, these owners are going to have to dip into their own pockets. And that, for me, is a great sign to hear that they're willing to help and dig into their pockets. But the only worrying thing is, for me, is how long can these people keep propping the league up or propping these clubs up? They actually need to be run properly.
Yeah.
And very, very quickly, Simon, the issue for me, again, when you're talking about investing in a football club, in Australia, what are you actually getting? Because clubs don't own stadiums, they don't own training facilities, and they currently own the players, which we don't have a trend or a natural progression for these players of consistently selling to make the money generated through sales. So the license, is it 5 million, is it 10 million, is it 15 million, but what are you actually getting?
Well, this is the chicken and egg situation again, which goes back to our initial question, because that will change once the clubs get independence. But until they get independence, it's not an attractive proposition. I mean, goodness me, you could bang your head against a brick wall for the next 3 months, I think, on all this. In Vince Rigari's story this week, just to, I think you alluded to this, Maury, an interesting line saying some elements on the FFA board did feel that the best way was to strip the license from Martin Lee, withdraw the Jets from the A-League, and perhaps bring them back the following season, although that would have made for a very lopsided A-League once again. In the interim, you know, we should also pay tribute and give a lot of credit to Laurie McKenna, who's, I think, virtually kept the club alive single-handedly over the last few months. It's a miracle, really, that they're still going.
Yeah, and look, Laurie, we know how hard he's always worked and his love for the game and... you know, it's a very, very tough task, but, you know, to keep Newcastle in a position where hopefully they can present to somebody. But at the end of the day, it's not down to Laurie McKenna. You know, he's obviously trying to do his very best, but it's a situation that needs to get sorted out because ownership, you know, it needs to be strong ownership. Clubs need to be run correctly. And if they're not, there should be punishments. It happens all throughout the world. Because you have to set standards. The bar needs to be set at some stage.
Talking of the A-League New Boys, a story on FTBL this week, Spider MacArthur have registered the name the MacArthur Bullpen on the 9th of December as a part of their club. A statement from the club says, we're of the opinion that the bullpen should adhere to normal regulatory standards as required by New South Wales Fair Trading. The bullpen needs to have a constitution with normalised elections, and any proceeds from merchandise and fundraising should go to the incorporated bullpen entity, not an individual bank account. This is an interesting situation. I don't know whether the police have advised MacArthur on moving their active supporter group to a different part of the ground as well, but it seems to me that control of active supporter groups is not necessarily the way forward when you're trying to generate that atmosphere. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, the Wanderers had it with the RBB. So is that what they're trying to do at MacArthur? I read that, Simon, and I had no idea. I couldn't make sense of it. So as way a pay, way above my pay grade. I couldn't make sense of it. So can you make more sense of it for me?
I think the fact is that if the club officially registers names such as the MacArthur bullpen, then the feeling from the supporters is that they're trying to control the active supporter group. That's their complaint. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily the intention of MacArthur FC, but that's what the supporters are complaining about this week.
And they would have a reason to complain if that was the case, Simon, because the supporters of any football club have got the right to support that football club, to voice their concerns, their opinions, and to be independent. Again, we don't maybe know the ins and outs of it, but controlling is something we've seen too much in Australia. And I'm very much for the your own opinion, especially when you're supporting a football club.
Just in general, I mean, obviously, I'm not originally from Australia. I've always found it quite strange that the active supporter groups seem to be these entities. For me, growing up, you went and supported your team and you sang or you didn't. And it was as simple as that. But it seems to be a lot more formalised in Australia. But they do provide that point of difference for our sports. And they need to be encouraged, in my opinion, in every possible way within the limits of the law to be able to express that support for their clubs, because that is ultimately that noise, that atmosphere, Spider, is what brings people to the games. It attracts people.
Yeah, look, I mean, people have a love for the club, and once you choose a club, that is your club. So, you know, this, I don't know whether we're following other codes or what we're doing or how it's working in Australia. It's, I'll be honest with you, I actually find it even strange to understand, because we've probably not been brought up like that. So I'm actually trying to get across it, and we all know how digital savvy I am. So I've got no idea. Like, if I wanted to be a MacArthur bullpen, I wouldn't even know how to get in there.
But Spides, I think it's kind of something like, if you're going to have that control from clubs or that ability to be able to work closely with your supporter active group, then it's more along those membership kind of models, you know, the Bundesliga model, that kind of model where, okay, yes, we're going to work with you and there's going to be good communication and there's the opportunity for fans to invest in that football club. That probably works.
That would work.
Well, let's hope they can sort that out, because we need MacArthur to be a success on and off the pitch in this coming A-League season. Signing news for the new campaign: we're going to have 5 Asian players in the A-League this season. Not a huge amount, but it's more than we've had in the last few years. All Japanese. The latest, Mori Masato Kudo, who's joined Brisbane Roar. He's still only 30, 66 goals for Kashiwa Reysol and 4 caps for his national team. I think that's a good signing.
Good age, Simon. I spoke to Spider during the week about how well Asian players have done in Australia, because we know that technically they're very good. And in regards to adjusting to, you know, training methods or what have you, look, they've worked a lot harder from countries where they're coming from, and they normally contribute very well to our league. So I'm actually quite excited, you know, 5 players this season. You know, would have loved to have seen it happen earlier, if I'm being honest, but that's been due to the financials, because we know how hard it is to get the best players in Asia to Australia in terms of finances.
That's an interesting point, actually, that I think that's a common conception, isn't it? I don't know whether it's a misconception, but that Asian players are, and inverted commas, too expensive for us. And yet there are bargains out there. There are players that can be enticed to Australia. It just leads me on to a more general point. Spider, interested in your take on this. On the 1st of January 2021, and I do confess there is an ulterior motive for this question, because I have written an article on this for the Optusport website this week. It will be 15 years since we joined the Asian Football Confederation. Overall, in your opinion, has it been a good experience for us? I think we'd probably say it has been, but also for them.
Well, I think for us it has been, because we've developed and we're trying to catch up and grow. I think they were well ahead of us before. I think what have we added to the AFC? Maury touched on it a couple of weeks ago on the pod, is this they want to beat us because we think we are a big country in Asia. We think we're massive, but the Asians think of us as a small country. So for us, I think it's good. Can we grow on it? Should we be better? We should be much better. Bringing Asian players to the A-League, I think is fantastic. Can we jump in and get some sponsorship dollars? Can we create interest from these Asian countries and these Asian players that come and play in the A-League? I think we got to work on things. Our A-League's struggling at the moment, Simon. So that's another big problem.
And I think, Simon, as well, and you'll know better than me, and it might even be in your article, I'm not sure, but what have we given them? So I think that's the part where, in terms of, you know, commercially and how many people in Australia have really taken towards our involvement in Asia and therefore contributed to the growth of businesses. So those corporate dollars probably not flowed from Australia through to Asia.
Absolutely, they haven't. And that does indeed, you're right, form a part of the article. So look out for that one this week. I guess it's cultural in many ways, isn't it? And unfortunately, I don't think we have grown the Asian brand, if that's even a thing, in terms of awareness well enough in this country. And it remains a cultural outlier. Talking of culture, one thing that Australians do understand very easily is state of origin, certainly on the eastern seaboards. And we saw the return of state of origin style football games between NPL reps from Queensland and New South Wales at the weekend. The naming of trophies after legends, the Watson O'Connor Cup for the women, the Gibb Masters Cup for the men. And they were good games as well, both ending in draws and going to penalty shootouts, and Queensland winning the women's and New South Wales winning the men's. Cycle games. Did either of you watch them on NPL TV?
I did. I watched the men's game, and I think it's a great initiative. And once again, because these guys that are playing in the NPL, they are trying to maybe get to the A-League. This is an appreciation of the season that they've had playing for their clubs in the NPL, and to actually play for their state and to represent their state. Because you know they're not going to go on and play for the Socceroos or something like that, but to actually be able to represent their state in an NPL All-Star game like that is fantastic. I thought it was a great initiative. I think it should come back, and I think it'll even grow.
No, it will. Tops. And Simon, what was the crowd? Was it a decent crowd?
Yeah, it was a decent crowd. Unfortunately, the weather was a bit inclement in Brisbane on Saturday. It hammered down with rain for much of the afternoon. But the Bill Waddell stand on the far side was reasonably full. Obviously, the hills were a bit emptier because of the weather with no cover. Yeah. But I think overall, the concept went down very, very well indeed. And it's the first time it's been played in 17 years for the men, 15 years for the women.
Wow.
So it's great that it's been brought back. And just one point I wanted to make on this. You know, on Saturday, ahead of calling these games, I actually took a trip down to Sir Joseph Banks Park in Botany, which is where the very first state of origin game in football was played in 1890. Still a lovely grass surface there. It's still used for sport where the two teams played. There is a plaque on the side of the field that commemorates the Botany Bay Gift, which is an athletics race, and the first game of rugby league, which was in 1908. And there's nothing for football. Again,
What a shock.
We are expunged, ignored from history. And yet our game took place 18 years before the first game of rugby league. So I know the FFA are aware of it and are hopefully going to try and do something about it. But these are the sorts of things that build culture over the years and build that sense of belonging, intrinsic belonging. Do you agree?
I totally agree.
Okay. Nikita Rukavica is our next talking point. He's on a heck of a run at the moment, although he did come to an end last week. He failed to score for the first time in 14 matches for Maccabi Haifa.
That's terrible form, isn't it? That's terrible form.
Ooh, drop him. Is he in for a Socceroos recall? He's 33, but he's got 14 goals, 5 assists in 12 games this season, albeit in the Israel Premier League. I don't know what the standard's like over there. 22 goals last season, Spider.
Good standard.
Yeah, and Morey's right. And this is the thing. He's always been a very good player. And people in Australia like to say, oh, he's playing in Israel. Let me tell you, the Israel League is very strong. And to be able to score that many goals in consecutive matches, players in the A-League don't do it. Players in the NPL don't do it. So it's not easy. It doesn't matter what league you play in. He's playing for a very good club. He's always been a good player. Probably didn't shine in Australia like he could have when he was at Wanderers. But what has happened? He's developed as a player. He's found the right league. He's found the right team, the style, and it suits him down to a ground. And he's doing fantastically. And 33 is not old, Morey, as you know.
No. Look, the question that Simon asked is he somebody that could be selected or be looked for the Socceroos? Yes, 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 for me. For me, he's a must, Spoids. He's the only player that's playing regularly and scoring goals. And one thing that Nikita Rukavica has got and has always had, and he's always a threat to any team you play against, and you love this word, Spides, piss. He's got speed, mate, which is always going to potentially hurt teams. He's matured a lot as a football player. He scores goals. He's playing in a decent league, playing football. So he's a red-hot chance for any Socceroos national team, whenever that may be.
Talking of national teams, our Matildas, or at least a handful of them, involved in the UEFA Women's Champions League during the week, and will be again this coming week. Sam Kerr missed out on a Champions League debut through injury as Chelsea breezed past Benfica in their first leg of the round of 32. Ellie Carpenter making a Champions League debut for Lyon as they edged out Juventus 3-2 in Italy, and Alex Chidiak on the bench for Atletico Madrid as they defeated Servette of Switzerland by 4-2. Looking forward to watching those girls in action again in the second legs of those ties this week. All right, let's head overseas. London calling.
London calling.
Let's start in Europe, actually, with the racism row, guys, that engulfed the Paris Saint-Germain Basaksehir game in the Champions League during the week. Players from both teams walking off in support of Pierre Weibo, who was allegedly referred to in a racist manner by the fourth official. Is this football's line in the sand moment when both teams walk off and say, nah, we're not copping this anymore? Is this the line in the sand moment that football needed?
Look, it was a bad situation. I'm not defending the linesman or fourth official. I don't know if it was deliberately said in that way, if it was just said in a way of, it was just wrong, and it all blew up, and both teams, I think, made a stance. Mm-hmm. You hate to see things like this, and you would think with all the promotional stuff that we've done about racism, and people would understand, and then something like this happens and it blows up again. And it's terrible. We can't control what people say. Like, they're individual people saying certain things. You can't control that. You'll never be able to control that. But it was a sad case of events, that's for sure.
Did you guys ever come across, experience, witness racism during your playing careers? Obviously, you're two guys who are probably not going to be on the on the wrong end of it, but did you bear witness to racism during your playing careers?
I've heard, like, throughout my career, Simon, like the throwaway comments, but again, it's kind of like it's through a respect or trust or a relationship, and I think it's when it's taken the wrong way and said in a nasty kind of way. Look, the way I've been brought up is, like, respect everybody. There's many different cultures, there's many different races, but be respectful. It costs you nothing, but it's something that unfortunately we still do see in football. And I'm hoping that with this situation, Simon, you're right, that, you know, potentially now that more work is done and aligned, in the sand kind of moment, because it's unacceptable. The current day that we live in, like I says, it doesn't matter what colour you are, it doesn't matter where you come from, it's about respect.
Yeah,
I agree. That sort of leads me on to my next point, and this is a very tricky one to answer, I think. This happened in the same week, of course, as some Millwall and Colchester fans booed the taking of the knee by players ahead of matches, which has been sort of prevalent right across the UK and many parts of Europe as well. The English Football League now saying they are considering scrapping the gesture as it's too closely associated with the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. The Millwall and QPR players stood together when they played each other last week. This is a tricky one, isn't it? Because for me, technically, if you stand for freedom of speech, then those booing, however abhorrent some of us may find their views, and I do, but they have a right to an opinion. So this is very, very tricky, isn't it? Sport has to tread a very fine line when it comes to acknowledging or being a part of political or cultural movements. Yeah. But the two are inextricably linked, aren't they? Everybody says sport and politics don't mix. Of course they mix.
Oh, they my God. Who says that?
They're a part of society.
Yeah, 100%. And it's a really tricky one, Simon. You're spot on because, you know, we're talking about colour. We're talking about race. We're talking about religions. It's really, really difficult. We're trying to unite the game. Everyone in the world plays football. So we're trying to unite the game. And like you say, there is a freedom of speech. So you can't control, again, what everyone says out there. So it really is hard. And I think by continuing to do certain things like that, I sort of think we're provoking it. And we're going to keep having incidents, which worries me. And players are now, I think players now are starting to feel like, come on, let's just get on with the game and let's not pinpoint the action to this.
Well, some players.
I mean, look, for me, it's also that ongoing education, isn't it? We're seeing a lot of that now, and hopefully we continue to see a lot more of that, because the more that we can educate people, the more that we can make people aware of what their words can actually mean to certain people. Simon, but as you say, with that freedom of speech, you can't discourage that as well, because you know, that is the right of every person to be able to express exactly how they feel.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Really tough.
It is a tough one. And just to finish off on a lighter note on that subject, I don't know whether you've seen the Crystal Palace Spurs game, but
Son
and Benteke, obviously just before they were about to take the knee, they're facing each other thinking that the whistle, it's game on. So Son's trying to wrestle with Benteke, who's trying to make a run in behind him. And once the whistle's gone,
then they realise
they've had to take the knee. It was actually quite funny to see.
Comedy
so I just
gold.
Wanted to finish that on a lighter note, that subject.
Yeah. Comedy gold. Unfortunately, I've got to bring you back down to earth again. Sorry about that. Before we move on to talk about the Premier League, the passing this week of two more high-profile ex-footballers, Alex Sabella, who took Argentina to the World Cup final in Brazil 2014, and Paolo Rossi, Spider, obviously your close connections with Italy, scorer of that brilliant hat-trick against Brazil. At the 1982 World Cup. And incredibly, would you believe that Rossi's family home was burgled during his funeral this week?
Sickening.
It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
It shows that people in this world, and I'm not saying everyone, but some people really have no morals.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's terrible. You look at, Paolo Rossi, but again, he's only young, wasn't he? He's not that old. 62, 64.
Yep.
64. I mean, golden boot, Ballon d'Or. Spider's probably more your, because you're a little bit older than me. I mean, I remember bits and pieces of the 82 World Cup. But again, it's very young. And unfortunately, another bit of bad news, even, you know, in terms of, is it Sabella? 66, Simon,
yep,
as well.
Not
very old at all. You know, was somebody that experienced in English football, I think, with Sheffield United and Leeds. But unfortunately, we're losing people at such an early age nowadays. It's been a horrific year. It really has.
Well, I'm older than both of you, and I do remember Alex Sabella coming to England in 1978. They'd literally only just relaxed the rules on foreign players coming into the top division in England, and Sabella was one of the first, along with Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa, who signed for Tottenham. Of course, you know, went on to win the FA Cup and were much more famous than Sabella was, but Sabella was a terrific footballer for Sheffield United. Then he went to Leeds. And then, of course,
it's a midfield
and a very good coach. Yes, yes. All left peg as well. Terrific balance, super player. And he went on to have a good coaching career, obviously, with the national team in Argentina as well. So our condolences to the families of both.
Yes.
And the football world, again, is poorer.
Mourns.
They're passing. On pitch action, guys. The Manchester Derby was the headline act this weekend, but oh, dip.
Snore draw.
Snore draw. Go on, Spider.
Boys, seriously. Now, if the crowds are not playing a part, then I don't know what is, because that was a training ground performance between two teams with no crowd, with nothing to lose. There was no crowd to just get up off their chairs and scream when someone had a throw in, or when the attacking team had a goal kick, or when there was a tackle getting flown in to, you know, there was no extra.
What was it tackles? Was it tackles in that game? Roy Keane wasn't happy. And only two yellow cards in the derby.
Maybe Roy Keane should have just been plonked behind one of the goals and told to berate them to get on with it.
Both teams were tactically very well structured, but there was no intent in the game. There was no intent to go out and win. And you know what the scary thing was, guys? That at the end, when the whistle went, it seemed to me that both managers were happy with it.
Relieved. Relieved.
Well, I think, you know, it's certainly United, after the week that they had, they went out of the Champions League after the loss to RB Leipzig. There's a lot of questions over the future of Paul Pogba as well. Even though they were at home, I think that point, you know, potentially saved Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's job. I don't know whether you agree with that. City are going through a real sort of revamp under Pep Guardiola. Gary Neville says that they're a pale shadow of the team that won the last two championships. Is he right?
You're missing a 25 goals a year striker, and that's killing you at the moment. And you know what? They get the big bucks for that. You're missing it. You just play the old nice football. You get to the final third. You just create chances, but you don't have that potent goal striker. And that's a big problem for Man City at the moment. Still play nice. Still got all the quality of footballers, but that final third, you're missing it.
Yeah, it's not good at the moment. Could be worse, though, Maury. We could be Arsenal. Four straight home losses, the latest to Burnley. Gee, Mikel Arteta's going to be under the pump this next few days.
Yeah, this one was yucky poo. you know, to lose at home to Burnley, who have struggled, have struggled all season, let's be honest. Another sending off, Simon. So, you know, when things haven't been going for Arsenal, their discipline seems to go. So that's a concern. Look, I really like Mikel Arteta, but obviously you're at a massive football club like Arsenal, and big things were expected. Improvement on the back of, you know, what he'd done last season, leading into this season. But, you know, what's that? Four defeats at home?
Four straight losses. The first time since 1959 that's happened.
I love that stat, Simon. Good one. But, I mean, that's but, you know, that's just not good enough for a club like Arsenal. And it is a concern. Look, I don't know none of us know the ins and outs behind the scenes, but how big does it seem now in terms of the call on Mesut Ozil not being involved in that football team?
Good shout. And Arsene Wenger's been vocal this week in sticking his oar in and maybe adding to the pressure on Arteta, Spider, by saying he's not difficult to manage. You just, you know, got to handle him the right way. It all seems to be conspiring against Arteta. And the fact that Aubameyang is so horribly out of form, and Lacazette, his two main strikers really and provider of goals, is adding to to things.
You know what I find incredible, guys? You know, when Sir Alex left Man United, they were stinking for years. And now, you know, and then, you know, you see someone like Wenger leaves Arsenal and he's left a legacy there. Whoever come in after him is going to be paddling. And we all spoke about it at the beginning of the year. Arsenal looked better. Arteta got him playing better towards the end of the season. Season started and they're back to the shambles that they were. Look, I don't know if you'll last, because you guys know better than me. Arsenal's one of the big four in England and they should be up there. And if they're not fighting to be in the top four, Arsene Wenger, 17 years in a row, was in the top four in England.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, and we're looking at who's the major or the top goal scorer at the moment for Arsenal. Is it Eddie Nketiah?
Yeah,
who's played something like 161 minutes. He's the top goal scorer for Arsenal this season. Aubameyang is a great player. We know how good a goal scorer he is, but Spides, he keeps taking up these positions down the channels, down in these wider areas. They need him in the box.
100%. He's a number nine, mate. He needs to be central and wait to get the service and score. Maybe the way Arteta wants to play, he wants him to do a lot more work. I'll give you a perfect example. Christian Vieri, when he played for Inter Milan, number nine goal scorer. Stood up front, middle, waited for the service, scored goals. Every year scored 20, 25 goals. He'd come to Milan and he'd have to work his bollocks off for the team. And then he'd say to him, he goes, man, can't score anymore because I've got to do too much work here. When I get a chance to score, I'm tired and I'm not taking my chances. And that's what's happened, I think, to Arsenal, to Aubameyang, Lacazette. They're very good players.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a rethink required from Mikel Arteta. Here's an interesting one. When do you reckon the last time, and I don't know the answer to this, this is a rhetorical question, the Big Six, Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham, Liverpool, Man United, Man City. And not one of them won this weekend. Not one.
I don't have the answer.
I don't have the answer to it, but it's an interesting
year. Spider's the same. Crazy year. crazy year. And you're going, for me, Liverpool and Tottenham have been the most consistent teams in the EPL. But then they both drop points today against teams that you're going, well, they shouldn't be dropping points there. It's just... you just scratch your head stuff, Simon. But that, in terms of the top six, when they've not, or none of them got a win in a particular weekend, I don't know when that would be.
Yeah, mate,
I feel sorry for the people that are out there trying to have a punt and collect the multi.
Who might that be, mate?
You've actually got no chances. People scratching their heads out there going, mate, how's that possible?
Oh, dear. Couple of questions from elsewhere before we finish this particular segment. Maury, I want to come to you on this one. Story from Scotland, where you're living at the moment, the Aberdeen chairman, Dave Cormack, urging Celtic to rethink their refusal to join this long-mooted Atlantic League involving 20 teams from Scotland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Ireland. Yeah. It's a plan that has the backing of JP Morgan, projected income of up to €400 million. Is this a go of this competition?
And it also has the backing of UEFA, I believe.
Yeah,
so,
interestingly.
Interestingly, because this is something normally, when they talk about the Super League and all that sort of stuff, that I'm not sure whether it's UEFA or FIFA, but there's been always heavily against something like this. Look, I know why the Scottish clubs would want to be involved. That'd have something to do with a $300 or $400 million broadcast deal. Celtic, for whatever reason at the moment, I think Dermot Desmond has kind of said, it's not for us.
They want to be in a British league, don't they, Celtic?
Yeah, so I don't know. But look, I have heard a bit of a murmuring, that this is something that has some legs. It's genuine in terms of, the Scottish clubs that have been linked to it are definitely looking to try and proceed with something like this, because I believe that the money they can get from the broadcast obviously will filter down and hopefully make improvements to the rest of the football.
It's been on the agenda for quite a few years now. It'd be interesting to see if they can finally get it off the ground with Celtic or without them. Finally, one for you, Spider. Qatar announced this week that they will play as a guest team in the European qualifiers for the World Cup in 2022. They're going to play friendly matches as a shadow team in Group A against whichever side has a free date on a given match day. The group involves Serbia, Ireland, Luxembourg, Azerbaijan, and Portugal. They're also going to take part in the Copa America in 2021 mm-hmm. and the CONCACAF Gold Cup as guest team as well. They're going to play in every single tournament in the world to get ready for this World Cup.
It's unbelievable. And it just shows to you, how much has the game changed? Like, I mean, Australia was supposed to go to the Copa America. We've been binned from that. Qatar's going. They're playing in...
Correct
that, Spider. Australia haven't been binned. Qatar were going anyway. Australia were also invited as a guest team.
Yes.
I'm just not 100% sure whether Australia is going to be able to go because there's the Olympics and World Cup qualifiers. So, anyway.
Continue.
I just think it's incredible that these countries are playing all these tournaments outside their confederations. I don't feel it's right, Simon, to be honest with you. So,
what about Australia being in Asia?
Well, I mean, us being in the Asian Federation, I think that's where we should be. I think we should be in the Asian.
But we weren't historically, were we?
Historically, we weren't. No, but I think I really find it amusing to see. It's all about money for me. It's got nothing to do with the game anymore. It's all to do with money and what suits.
Do you think this was maybe something that was already in place in terms of, I mean, Qatar have obviously got the 2022 World Cup and they're probably getting favours from a lot of people that maybe there was some certain situations previously, Simon.
I think there's a part of it. I think obviously the fact that, you know, they are acting as hosts, not just for the World Cup in 2022, but they've just hosted the Asian Champions League group stages, and they're still, you know, going all the way through to the final. Yeah. The Club World Cup they're offering to host. Mm. You know, they've obviously got a lot of influence in world football, and yeah, you're right, money sort of buys a lot of that. But I think at its basis level, this is about getting their team ready. Not to embarrass themselves on the world stage on home soil in front of a watching globe in 2022. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's right. They're playing in all these overseas tournaments, but it's an interesting strategy. And they've come a long way, to be fair, in terms of their football, haven't they?
Well, it's the Brazilian B team, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. But Spides, they're a very, very good side. And I know that you say that maybe you don't agree with it, but... I've got no issue with that. But what I will say is that Qatar have been absolutely outstanding in terms of utilising their networks. Because 100%. Simon, you touch on it in terms of, mate, I'm actually a little bit envious in terms of the pull and the creativity and the power that they've had to enable their national team to have such preparation for a World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be nice, obviously, if we could do the same thing. But whether Australia will play in that Copa America in 2021 remains to be seen. All right. So thanks for the moment, guys. Let's move on to our final segment for the day. And another special guest awaits us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Wollongong in 1981 and began his footballing life with the Wollongong Wolves. He headed overseas as a 17-year-old to play for Middlesbrough, where he made his Premier League debut in 2002 against Southampton. In 2003, in search of regular football, he joined Bristol City, where he stayed for 3 years before a switch to Holland with Twente Enschede in 2006. From there, he played in Russia for Dynamo Moscow twice, Terek Grozny, back in Holland for Feyenoord, and then finally back home in the A-League for Sydney FC. He won 80 caps for Australia, appearing at 2 World Cups and 2 Asian Cups, and he's now the head coach of his old club, Wollongong Wolves, where he's already won 2 trophies. And on Saturday, he added a third as New South Wales beat Queensland in the return of the interstate clashes after a 17-year absence. It's a real pleasure to welcome Luke Wiltshire to our humble podcast. How are you, Luke? Good to see you, mate.
Yeah, good day, fellas. No, I'm well. Been a busy weekend, but back at it and happy.
You sound a little bit hoarse. Is that because you've been shouting or you've had a couple of beers?
It's been a big weekend. It's a bit early, mate. the change of the weather, I think, as well.
Yeah. How was the trip to Brisbane and the return of the State of Origin clashes, if you like?
No, it's brilliant. I think the concept's fantastic. I think they'll look to build and grow that, which I think is unreal. The players really enjoyed it. They took it seriously, which was good. It was a good competitive game. And I think, one for the fans to really enjoy as well.
And things have gone pretty well with Wollongong Wolves as well. You won the Premiership and the NPL Final Series in 2019. You just missed out this time around.
Yeah, no, I can't complain. I think I was obviously disappointed this year. We lost the Premiership on one goal, a goal difference, which was disappointing. But no, it's been exciting to work with a young group, which is a challenge. But there's guys there that are thriving for an opportunity, and you can see what they can do with a bit of hard work and guidance.
Before we move on to your playing career, Luke, we've got a fair few questions on that. I just want to stick with it, with the Wollongong Wolves theme for the moment. This year, of course, Wellington Phoenix are going to play in the Gong due to COVID. Do you see this as an opportunity to spruik the chances of the city getting an A-League club, or do you feel you should already be there? And we had a Twitter question on this as well from George G. Along similar lines, do you think the Phoenix being there is a test to expand to the area in the future?
I guess it depends how you want to see it. It could be. I think if you start to see the likes of Wellington Phoenix being here in Wollongong or Wind Stadium and drawing crowds, being not the team of the region, I think it shows clearly that there's that appetite for A-League football here. So you could say it's a test like that. Of course, it's going to be different. How could you expect people to get out and support Wellington Phoenix? It's not Wollongong. But those football diehards that want to see A-League football can, I think, will turn out, especially in the big games against Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory, which will show how much we're thriving for A-League football down here in our region.
Is the city ready for the A-League, Luke? And I'm talking about, obviously, the club as well, but there seems to be, and we're looking from the outside here, a fair bit of politics about football in Wollongong. What's going on
politics
down there?
Politics? What are you talking about, politics?
Politics in football?
Well, there seems to be some issues there, particularly at the moment, that you've been a little bit vocal about. What's going on down there in the Gong?
Yeah, look, there's no hiding from the fact that there's a little bit of unrest, you could say, with the way some things are run down in our region with Football South Coast and, you know, the local league clubs at the moment are having a bit of a dog verge into the goings-on in the administrative side. And so look, things have got to change. We know that. I think everyone knows that. I think it's trying to find the way to make the change in the best way for the game going forward. I think that's the most important thing, is that the people that are making these decisions have the game's interests first and foremost at the forefront of their decision making.
Well, it's about accountability, isn't it? And we keep harping on about this, whether it be at regional level or at national level. People who are in positions of power have to be held accountable, and that is in part at least our job here in the media, and people sometimes don't like that, but it's the truth. Let's go all the way back to your early days as a footballer, Luke, and that starts with your days at the Wolves as a player. You're coming through the ranks. You've got Scott Chipperfield already in the first team and Miller Stojowski coming through the ranks, a couple of years older than you. Did you ever think that in 2006, all three of you from that same region would be playing at a World Cup in Germany?
No, definitely not. I think I only spent actually 6 months playing for the Wolves back in my junior years. Mm. Spent a lot of my time going up to New South Wales Institute of Sport and obviously the AAS. But no, look, it's a region that's had players come through. Obviously us three were probably the noticeable ones. At the moment, you got Federici coming out of here as well. So there's been loads of players. There's a lot of talent down in the region. I think still there's a long way to go for our region to develop and to be able to produce more. The infrastructure down here is not great, but there's definitely that talent.
You went pretty quickly overseas, Luke, as a teenager. How did the move to Middlesbrough come about? And do you remember that debut that I mentioned in the intro against Southampton?
Yeah, I do. I do. It came about, I was in the New South Wales Institute of Sport and received what's called a Big Brother Scholarship, which got me over for a month, which was paid for with one other. And then, yeah, they wanted me from there. I kept in contact. I couldn't stay for visa reasons, come back to the AAS. Went over to the Milk Cup for a couple of weeks and to play just to, for them to see me again.
Is that in Ireland, Lukey?
Yeah, in Ireland. In Ireland.
It's a top tournament, yeah? By all accounts.
I went over there for 2 weeks. They didn't see me because I've been in the AAS for the year. I was 17. I could get my visa. I got a red card after about 30-odd minutes.
I like you.
That's not like you, Luke.
Then I was devastated. And then my old man came up in my room and I got offered a 3-year professional deal. So there you go.
In your early days in the Premier League, I know you also got sent off against Arsenal for a tackle on Robert Pires. Do you remember
that one? Two yellows. One on Lundberg, one on Pires.
But that Middlesbrough team at the time, you were playing with some terrific players. Obviously, Mark Schwarzer, we remember here in Australia, but there was Gareth Southgate, there was Alan Boxich, there was Jeremy, Hugo Ehiog. It was tough for you to get into that first team at Borough at the time.
Yeah, it was at the time. They were spending money. We had some massive players at the club, and that was sort of why I left. I'd made my way into the team and the fringe of the team, but I didn't feel justice. It was when Steve McLaren was there that I was performing. But the moment a senior player was back fit, I'd be shafted back out onto the bench or out of the squad. So I was sort of filling in those gaps for him and doing well, and I didn't feel that I was getting rewarded for it. Also, I had an issue with my contract that I was meant to get extended. So my reasoning to leave, I wanted to play regularly. But now some fantastic players. I was always that player who wanted to play. I wasn't happy to sit on the fringe of things.
Lukey, I obviously come across you early doors, 2004 Olympic Games, and you were playing as a central midfielder then. But obviously later on, there was a switch, obviously with your position. Obviously with the national team. When was it you made that switch to the right fullback position, and how did you find that adapting to a new position at such a stage in your career?
It would have been after the 2006 World Cup. I played also in midfield at the World Cup.
Yes.
Fred Rutten at FC Twente. Started playing in midfield when he signed me, and he sort of looked at me and just said, like, for you to go to another level, to a top level, you need to go to a right back, a modern day right back. I took it on. I never liked to defend, but I made the most of the position. I enjoyed it. And it was just turned into a modern-day right-back. The modern-day right-back goes forward and gets on the ball and creates as well. Mm-hmm.
Luke, you were still in midfield when you moved to Bristol City from Middlesbrough in an attempt to get that first-team football that you were craving. I've seen you quoted in an article recently as saying the 3 years you spent at Ashton Gate were, and I quote, the worst of your career. Is that true? And if so, why is that? Was it just the style of football?
No, it is true. It was frustrating. It was challenging. The style of football, the first year we expected to get promoted straight away. The manager got sacked. We had a few others, and I ended up with a manager called Gary Johnson. Can I swear on this podcast?
Of course you can.
Leave it out.
And he was just a little cockney fucker, right? I'd been playing regularly. My contract was running up. And when we qualified, we had the game against Uruguay and qualified for the World Cup. So my contract was due to end just before the World Cup. So naturally, I saw an opportunity there. I didn't want to stay there. I wasn't happy. And he just, the moment I wouldn't sign my contract, he just done everything he could to break me, to break my chances of being involved in that World Cup. So from playing regularly, I then ended up finding myself on the bench of the reserve team. So I had a few run-ins with him, and he ultimately in the end it all panned out okay.
Which is fascinating, because even despite all that, Huss Hiddink still showed faith in you, despite the fact that you weren't playing for a League One side. And picked you for the World Cup squad in 2006. And not only that, but started you against Japan in the first game as well. He was a real fan of yours, wasn't he?
And like I said, I was obviously naturally very, very nervous leading into the selection, and then obviously surprised to be starting the first game as well. But, I don't think I've ever worked so hard in my life in those 6 months, individually, personally, day in, day out, and then obviously mentally. being challenged. But yeah, I was very grateful for the faith that he showed in me.
Lukey, just there to touch on that particular squad, we've obviously had a few guests on now, and they all talk about just how happy that dressing room was and how that group of players were. You're a player that was coming in on the back of being slightly lesser known to a lot of the bigger players, but can you explain a little bit what the atmosphere was like at that World Cup for you and how you integrated into the squad?
Yeah, I think you said it there. It was a happy change room. The group was was very collective, had a common goal, was confident. You know, it was easy to fit into a group like that, even being a younger player coming in. I obviously, I come with a lot of people. I'm pretty open. It was an enjoyable group to be around. They wanted to work. They wanted to win, that mentality to win and togetherness.
And you developed a good partnership with Brett Emerton down that right-hand side as well, didn't you? It was almost telepathic at times.
Yeah, we're pretty similar players. We both had a decent engine and could play right back or right midfield. So playing on that right side, we could, if one got caught up the field, could cover. So we had a good understanding there.
Let's move back to your club days for the moment before we return to the Socceroos. You moved to FC Twente. There's a bit of a theme here, Luke. You were sent off on your debut against Heracles. Well, what on earth happened there?
I don't think it was a red card. I was in the first half too, I think, as well. It was a local derby against Heracles.
That helps.
Yeah. So I wanted to make myself known. So the guy was, it was his fault. He shouldn't have tried to run past me.
And then after 20, the real interesting move, I think, for a lot of people came in 2008. All of a sudden, you swap what is probably a quite comfortable life in Holland, and you go to Russia to play for Dynamo Moscow. You're the first Aussie to play in Russia. I know it's a move that sort of really changed your life, and I also know it's one that your mum didn't want you to make.
When I was there, there was a Russian player who actually retired from Twente when I went there. And Mitri Shukov, I think his name was. And he had a Dutch wife, so he'd stayed there. When we'd had obviously the back of two good years there at Twente and qualified for the Champions League 4 rounds against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And I just recently signed at the end of the season in March a new contract. And I'd received my sign-on fee and everything was hunky-dory. And this offer opportunity company just turned up to training ground one day, had an agent, said, "We've got a club in Russia for you." So I was obviously open to listen. I had a clause in my contract at 20, which they were happy to pay out. McLaren tried to stop me from going. Told me he'd sell me back to the Premier League the following year if I stayed, and I wouldn't get my money in Russia and all the rest of it. It'll be like what my mother was saying as well. He sort of said, "I couldn't give a fuck how much money they're going to pay you, then you dare go to Russia." My comment to them was, I'm on the other side of the world as it is, so I'm happy to go and have a look. And I went over for 3 days. Yeah. It's an amazing city. The club was fantastic. The facilities, the speaking to the president and the coach, and man, my mind was made up pretty easy.
Lukey, it's obviously, I mean, a lot of people maybe don't know enough about the Russian league, but it's a very tough league, obviously, and there's a lot of top talent that comes there as a starting point, especially South American Brazilian types. So you come up against absolutely wonderful players that maybe the whole of the world doesn't know yet, but there's some great talent that comes through that league, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is. I think if you look over the years, some of the players that have come out of there, likes a Hulk. There's massive players that go there. Kevin Karani, the Finnish top goal scorer in the German Bundesliga was playing with me. Andre Verona, not played with. It's a very, very tough league. It's challenging with the travel, with obviously the climate. It was a good challenge. And the city of Moscow is like no other.
With the language, but how are you with the language?
That's the
barrier, obviously.
Yeah, it was, especially the early days. I think nowadays there's a lot more English-speaking Russians going around than the new generation. But when I first went there, it was challenging, and we had translators. And so you picked up the words pretty quickly, the ones you need on the football pitch and to get by and to order a beer and things like that.
You said, Luke, that the travel was challenging. A couple of questions about the league here. First of all, what was the worst trip you had to do? And secondly, once you've answered that one, what were the derbies like with Spartak? Were they a bit tasty?
Yeah, the travel was, you know, so we'd be flying about our own. We used to fly on a yak, actually, the yak, whatever they were, in the back of the planes. And so it was a little bit rough at times, but I think probably one of the worst. I didn't have to go to Vladivostok, thankfully. They got relegated when I got there.
That's a trip.
I played in my home, which is good. So, but going somewhere like Tomsk, it's 4 or 5 hour flight. It's freezing cold. The stadium is shite. And no, the hotel is crap. Or going to Grozny in the early days. Grozny, when I first went, we literally, you're like sleeping in a bunker. You know, you got people everywhere, and that's changing now also. And the Spartak derbies, the derbies were fantastic. It was always a great atmosphere, massive rivalry. Like anyone, you know, boys who know played in derbies, always heated. And I think we got up on most of them.
You led me into the next question quite nicely there. You played for Terek Grozny in 2015. I remember reading this and thinking, what on earth is he going there for? It's a war zone. Why did you decide to move to Chechnya? And what was life like there?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. That's for sure. I think, you know, when I come back from Holland, I was thought I was close to someone in Dinamo Moscow. It didn't eventuate, and I wanted to obviously still be playing. So that opportunity come up, and again, like going to Russia, you know, the Grozny's changed. It's actually quite beautiful. The food is amazing, and the club was great until they didn't want me anymore, and then I just had to get out of there as quick as possible.
In the middle of all that, Luke, you did mention that you'd moved back to Holland, which you did with Feyenoord. You'd sort of chopped around a little bit. And yet, despite playing in the top leagues in Europe, in the Netherlands and then in Russia, you were ultimately cut from Ange Postecoglou's World Cup squad for Brazil. I don't know if you want to talk about that particular topic, but it seemed to be a rather angsty time for you and for Ange and for the national team with regards to the cutting of those final few players for Brazil.
Yeah, look, things happen for a reason, and I played my part in that. But I think it was pretty clear to me. I think the moment Ange took over that he didn't really want me around. And I don't know if that was due to the way I play or my personality. But no, look, that things happen for a reason, I believe. And, you know, I don't hold any grudges. I look back and, you know, I always like to say things happen. You look back and you're like, that, you know, that actually did me a favour. So, you know, as disappointed as I was, you know, I moved on. I went back to Moscow where my wife was pregnant and we had our first child together. So, yeah, we move on from there.
A Twitter question from Mark Chikamambo. Again, on the Russian theme, what's the craziest thing you saw during your playing career in Russia, apart from the trip to Tomsk?
Craziest thing I've seen. There's a few. Craziest thing I've done. It's probably...
either or.
Yeah. I was suspended for the cup final. I didn't realise in the semi-finals a yellow card away. We were playing against Rubin Kazan, and who had a guy who... let's say, a personal vendetta against over the last year or so. And Adamenko, his name was. And we'd had a few instances on the pitch. And I was caught up during the game. I was up in the game with the doctor watching, and he scored the winner. So we lost. I was waiting for him in the tunnel and a little going in the tunnel. There was no cameras, but I still got suspended because there was enough witnesses.
Who won the fight, Luke?
No, it didn't happen for long. I got jumped. There was a few of them dragged me out. I don't know why they all said I'm all of the staff and the Ruben Kazan people were all saying that I'm crazy. I don't know why.
Oh dear. Let's go back to the tail end of your playing career, which strangely enough was back home in Australia with Sydney FC. Was that always your plan to finish off your career here? And you had a good year as well, winning the Cup and the Premiership, although you did lose out to victory in the finals.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't. I had no plans to come back to Australia and live or to play. I thought I'd retired after my last stint in Dinamo. I got promoted back to the Premier League in Russia, Russian Premier League. And I was on holiday in Thailand with the family, with the wife, mother-in-law, brother-in-law. And I got a call from Paddy Dominguez, and just said that, obviously what had happened to Ryan Green, and Arnie was reaching out and if I'd be interested. My initial response was no. I'd be on a hide into nothing at my age and to come back after what they'd just done with the back-to-back, the double. So, and it wasn't until my wife and probably my brother sort of persuaded me to have a crack and that I could still do it. I was planning to go back to Australia for a couple of months to see my family with my kids. So my wife saw it as, okay, it's a paid holiday, except I had to work.
It's always the case.
I've not stopped since, mate.
I knew if I did it, I had to do it right. I didn't want to come back, and I knew that if I didn't perform, and I was going to cop it. So I said, okay, I'll give it a crack 1 year, and it seemed to go all right.
Lukey, was it hard considering what you've seen happen to some of the other guys when they come back? Did you have to really put your mindset and say, well, mate, I really have to work hard because I am on a hiding to nothing?
Yep, 100%, 100%. That was why I was never in my mind to come back. I didn't want to. It's not, I'd seen what had happened to others, and I didn't want to sort of go out that way or have that. So I definitely had the mindset I had to work.
Yeah.
Which you certainly did. That leads us on to our Twitter question of the week. $100 voucher for Outback goes to Jovan this week. Jovan says, you were indeed signed as a replacement for Ryan Grant when he had that ACL injury in 17-18. Did you mentor him that year because he's been amazing since he came back? Did you offer some of your experience to him?
Yeah, he was already on his way up. I think he's a great guy. He's got a great mindset. I think he's done well to bounce back from what he's gone through, and obviously kicking on. He's maybe at the point I don't know whether he's missed the boat to go overseas or not.
I was going to say that, Lukey. Has he got that?
I don't think he wants to go overseas.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think he does have enough. I think he could. But the challenging thing would be where. And now at his age, and as you know, some of the top better clubs will be looking at probably younger players. To go.
Let's talk about the Socceroos. We have touched upon them once or twice already, but you had plenty of highs and lows with your national team career. Those two World Cups, two Asian Cups. You also missed out on the 2015 Asian Cup as well, which I'm sure you would have loved to have been involved in, given the Socceroos won it at home. And of course, the big win against Serbia in 2010 and Japan 4 years earlier. What's your favourite memories of the national team? Is it that World Cup in 06 or are there others?
Yeah, they're all good memories. I think there wasn't a time that I went to camp, apart from probably when Ange took over, that I didn't enjoy it. I loved every opportunity I got to play. Obviously for my country to pull on that shirt and to be around the group of players and men that were in those squads. I think, so it's hard to pinpoint certain memories, but naturally the qualification against Uruguay in the 2006 World Cup was phenomenal.
Yeah, they were great times, weren't they, for the national team, and you're a key part of that golden generation. Let's finish off, Luke, with a couple more Twitter questions. This one from Albert Shepherd. Who was your most influential coach in your career and why? And I'll extend that one out and say, who was the best player you played with and against?
Influential coach. I probably had two in terms of obstacle setting and the faith that he showed in me. To go to the World Cup and international team, and then Fred Rutten, who converted me from that midfield position to a modern day right back at FC 20.
And there's part of their coaching style in what you're doing now with the Wolves, is there? Would you say?
Yeah, there is. I think you know, obviously Fred had worked under Gus as well at PSV as his assistant, so they had some similarities. But there's definitely things in terms of what I'm doing that naturally you take out of those coaches that you've been with. And, you know, I go off, I definitely don't manage or coach in the way that my Cockney fucker does go. I know not to act like him. But like, you know, I want is a player to be, feeling, have the opinion of me like that.
And Luke, the best player you played with and against?
There's been a few. There's been a few. When I played with little Juninho at...
What a player.
A little, but I still say I played with a guy, and a lot would know him, but he's a Bosnian player. Dresden Misimovic. He played at Wolfsburg with Dzeko the year that Dzeko scored
a goal.
He was... unbelievable. You give him the ball, around four people around him, he wouldn't lose it. And if you looked at him, we saw him at Middlesbrough, and the first moment he was in the room with Karani. He's taking his shirt off, and Karani's just going, "Fuck, come on, man, we're not a tempting bowling team." You look at him, honestly, but my God, he could play. He would chip the keeper from inside the 6-yard box. He had everything. He was just a special player.
Very good player.
Go on, Spider.
Lukey, mate, I've got to ask you the question, mate. Best stadium you've ever played at and the biggest dungeon you've ever played at?
This is Spider's question of the week every single week in this segment.
Best stadium. Oof. My favourite stadium. Yeah. I love that Kaiserslautern Stadium where we played those games against Japan and Italy up there in the mountain. And the atmosphere that it created it always sits in my head as one of my favourite stadiums to play in. But those games are obviously special games for me personally. The worst?
The dungeon of all dungeons.
There's been a few of them made over in early days in Russia. I still remember that game in Tom's. Honestly, it was like a cow paddock. Minus 15 degrees. Change of room. No hot water. Like it's just an open pitch, and that was
You know, after every week after the show here, the dungeon gets that many hits on Google that it's scary. So Tom's going to be number one hit on Google this week.
And your mum was right. I'm sure you were thinking that at that particular point when you were in Tom's, Luke. Final one before we let you go. We started out talking about your coaching career. Let's finish on that note. You are on the rise as a coach. What's your ambition? Is it to coach in the A-League? Is it to coach overseas? Is it to coach the national team? Is it all of the above?
No, I don't know. I'm going to take it as it comes. At the moment, I'm enjoying. I guess I'm in a fortunate role that I am here at Wollongong, where I can do things my way. I've got great support with the board and I can do things in the right way, which is, you know, what I feel is best. So, you know, it's going to take something pretty good for me to move on and to leave. I'm enjoying sort of building what I am down here at the moment and where it takes me. You know, it's like when you start out your football career, you never know where it's going to take you.
You're not going to go back to Russia and coach? At the dungeons?
That's one thing I would say, that I would love to one day be there and manage in Moscow.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, brilliant, Lukey.
Yeah. Terrific. Hey, Luke, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you sharing your experiences, both as a player and as a coach. And I'm sure there's plenty more to come in the technical zone. Wish you all the very best with the Wollongong Wolves and whatever your future career as a coach has in store for you. Thanks, mate.
Keep up the good work, Lukey. Well done, mate.
Cheers, fellas.
And that is us for this week. Join us for our pre-Christmas edition next week. Until then, from all of us here on the podcast, it's bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.